a bunch of things to do this summer, fun activities that will be educational and enriching for your child in lots of areas. And a few tips for homeschoolers at the end. This is Great Shalom presenting Overcoming Learning Problems, and I'm Sharon Sarles. Good morning. Welcome back, everybody. I'm so glad to be with you. You know, I have a real heart for this. I'm just so glad I've been able to do this now. It's been a few years because I was in your shoes, a mother of a learning disabled child. That was actually the hardest. That was harder than being learning disabled myself in an academically oriented family or dealing with my grandchildren. By the time I was dealing with grandchildren, you know, I had the success of my daughter and gosh. And of course, I'd love to serve the teachers too, because I've certainly done that with great success, I think. You know, I used to feel like I pulled off miracles. Today, I'm more reliant on the Lord about that. But really, it's a great feeling to know that with faith and innovation and the right attitude and, well, the attitude finds the resources, right? I'd like to transfer that to teachers and parents, but my guess is it's mostly mothers who take me up on the offer. Anyway, so we are today going to talk about things to do with your children for the summer. This is one of our more favorite topics. I get lots of hits on this. So please, won't you come to the website and contribute your own ideas? Just after every post, there's space to type in, and you can also submit pictures. Please reduce them, you know, make them GIFs or JPEG. And we're not going to post anything but the first name. And if it's really relevant, you know, like it's a particular historical park, we might put the location. But we try to be sure that private information is not shared. So some random bad guy watching the internet cannot figure out whose child this is, where this is, and when this is. We had this carefully thought out at one preschool where I was the director, and the parents there felt that they were affluent enough that somebody might try to kidnap their kids. So we would never post pictures of current students and never last names. But you could see pictures of children in our school, because you kind of need that for advertising. But it would have been former children and, you know, or not their faces or something like this. But anyway, so we're going to adhere to those standards. You could put pictures of children doing fun things. Oh, and by all means, a whole write-up of how fun it was and what's going on and where it is and all of that. Of course, I'm just giving you guidelines for your writing. All right, for captioning or a whole article if you want. So, yeah, tell us what was going on. Okay, so I'm just going to go through a list of wonderful things to do. And I'm going to start with history today. History is on my mind. So the trips that middle-class Americans take should involve going to historical sites. You know, I think families devote an outsized portion of money going to amusement parks. And I'm not going to preach against that, but consider into perspective how much more good you're going to do for children if when you take a trip, you go to a historical site. You know, when I was a child, we went to Camp Landa, which is now Waterworld or whatever, but Camp Landa was much less grand and commercialized. It was really a hotel and a natural water source and a pool in San Marcos. And now there's great big water. So we did that. But also I remember one of my real big memories in my life is we took a road trip to New Orleans. Mother was interested in seeing the plantations. She loved looking at the furniture. But I gained so much history through that. Look, you know, traipsing around these plantations and seeing what all went on there. And so I recommend that. Plan to go to some historical sites. And there's probably some within a day's drive of where you are. Your state, like mine, might have some information online about some of these sites. There's a Texas magazine or Texas Highways magazine that's put out by the State Department of Tourism. And, you know, I find that I just wouldn't know about this unless I was clued in. You know, whatever you pay attention to and you think, well, I didn't see that advertised. Well, yes, well, I wasn't looking in the right place. So I recommend that you do that. You consult your nation or your state's tourism department. It's not necessarily aimed at you who are a resident, but, and then of course somebody else's if you're traveling there. Historical. And also one of my other memories is we were driving through North Carolina. That's Asheville, North Carolina. And we were reading the book Christie. So my sister and I were old enough to be reading the book. So sometimes mother would read, sometimes I would read, sometimes my sister would read. But it's a historical novel placed in that area in the Appalachians. And we just had so much fun because we felt part of the scenery. And it wasn't just trees and trees and trees and trees. And when we stopped and we bought honey, it was so special. And we stopped and we rented a hotel room in a motor court. And we happened to meet some people, some young men, as it were, and they were preaching a revival, fortunately in the right denomination for my parents. And so we went to their services. Oh, it was so wonderful. We really felt like we were part of the history and part of the community. And it was great. And it's a treasured memory. We had so much more fun than if it were just simply trying to cope with where are we going to eat and am I going to be on the right highway? Which, of course, is almost all I could manage as a single mom, unless I had planned. And so I wish now that I had planned to go with some people and done more planning. But, you know, as a one individual, you can just explore. And there's some wonderful things to that. But planning also can add a lot. And a group can add a lot. We would never have been able to read, you know, if it was just me and my daughter in the car, I couldn't have read Christie to her. And she might not have wanted to read it to me. So anyway, one of the reasons that history is on my radar is because my annual group event at Memorial Day included a bunch of adults, all pretty highly educated, sitting around a campfire. So one woman was opining that Texas was rooted in pushing Hispanics off of Texas. And, you know, Texas is rooted in racism. Well, she's a professor, but not of history. Anyway, and so to try to keep the situation rather light, I said, oh, well, do you know, to the group, who was the first president of the Republic of Texas? So I got more dumb looks from that group than I do from freshman college students. But somebody finally came up with the right answer. Was that Sam Houston? Yes. And I said, okay, and who was the first vice president of the Republic of Texas? Well, predictably, I got only dumb looks. And I said, his name was Antonio Navarro. Okay, so if you don't speak Spanish, Antonio Navarro was the first vice president of the Republic of Texas. And I said, and who was the other big general in the Battle of San Jacinto? San Jacinto, if you do speak Spanish. Okay, so who was the leading general? Well, since I called him a general, I didn't really specify, but I was meaning on the Texan side. But since I did specify, the real general in that story was Generalissimo Santa Anna, Santa Anna, we say. So on the Texan side or the Texican side, who was the leading commander? Well, yes, it was Sam Houston. So he was playing the role of a general, I guess. But who was the other big commander? Once again, from San Antonio. All right. So you understand why I told these upbeat factoids. Because the point here is that there were Spanish-speaking people, what we today would call Hispanics, who were on the Texican side because Santa Anna was not a well-liked person. Santa Anna had completely annihilated a whole village in what today we would call northern Mexico when he was marching on Gonzales. And so it is revisionist history at best to say that Texas was rooted and started by simply wiping out Hispanics off of the map. But that wasn't enough. So she proceeded to talk about the Mexican-American War and how the United States had stolen 3 provinces of Mexico, a third of Mexico's territory. Well, there was a Mexican-American War. It was a dispute because Mexico didn't want to recognize the independence of the Republic of Texas, which then joined the United States. And it was Mexico that opened fire on the United States, not the reverse, although of course there is some political la 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 la. And yes, considerable land mass transferred eventually to the United States, but all of that wasn't Texas. The border between Texas and Mexico was always the Rio Grande. It was the Spaniards who were the first rangers up and down that part of what we now call South Texas. And yes, during the Mexican-American War, the Mexicans wanted to claim up to the Nueces River. So what I'm saying is, really and truly, the border was always the Rio Grande River, and the large landmass that was transferred from Mexico to the United States was not related to the history of Texas. It has nothing to do with the cultural history of Texas. Has there been discrimination between people groups in Texas? Yes. Has there been violent conflict between people groups in Texas? Yes. But don't tell me that Texas is warp and woof, white against brown aggression, because that's simply not the history. But all I said was, it's very difficult to innovate history. And so one of the fellows who's, interested in peace, was going, blah, 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 blah. You know, there has been conflict between people. Yes, but that doesn't innovate history. Finally said, what do you mean innovate history? I said, when you have a political point, you make stuff up. Yes, that's exactly what I think was going on, making stuff up. And I think the whole conversation was rooted in entire ignorance, manipulated by a political intention. However, had it been a more serious conversation, it appears to me as I edit my episode that were one to take this position seriously, what one would be doing is wiping out the democratic decision of the original Texicans, because the original Texicans, both English-speaking and Spanish-speaking, intended to revolt from Mexico and become their own nation. if you want to make this argument, you have to be anti-democratic too. You have to be part of a lost cause, because this was actually two wars that were lost. Mexico lost in the conflict with the Texicans. They lost Texas, and Texas chose to become an independent nation. And then they lost when they decided to attack the United States over that same territory. However, they didn't lose Texas at that time because they had already lost Texas. They lost some territory, which only much later became states of Arizona and California and so forth, New Mexico and Nevada. So you have to be part of the lost cause. You know, the same erudite historians ridicule the people who still try to argue for the Civil War, the Confederacy of the South. Anyway, so you're anti-democratic. You're promoting a lost cause because you're refusing to recognize the settlement that was created in war, however much we don't like war. And third, you're racist. You're plain racist to assume that Hispanics have no voice, that Hispanics didn't participate in history, that Hispanics can't make up their own mind. Juan Seguin was an educated man, a competent man, and there have been competent, educated business people and people of all walks of life in San Antonio long before the Tennesseans came. Actually, there have been Spaniards in Texas having missions long before Jamestown was created. So you just advertised your own racism and your own ignorance of various people groups in your own wokeness. And if we have a real conversation, and then we're going to have to talk that way. The trouble is that we're not. We'll mention that later. So unless your student has access to real history, they are subject to innovated history. Not just revisionist history, but innovated. Innovated history otherwise is called fiction. And if your student goes to graduate school and reads original documents, they will then know that much of what they have been taught is simply false. But even if they become a professor of history, they may not be able to talk about it because that may not be politically correct in their department or so forth. So I recommend you not wait for that eventuality. But when they are children, take them to historical sites. So I apologize for the Texas bias here, but because that's where I live, you're going to get the idea. So I remember taking a German friend around to some historical sites within a day's drive. And I said, you know, I called her name and I said, I've got a car, I've got a day. Where would you like to see? I'll drive you anywhere. And so she wanted to go and see the Johnson Homestead, you know, where President Johnson, his property. And because what she knew about President Johnson was that he was a education president. Well, that wasn't my memory, but we went out there and we toured the Johnson Homestead. And sure enough, they did discuss how President Johnson had been a teacher and how he had worked toward better education in his view, in the United States. I remember him as the Vietnam War president. But anyway, and then we went over to New Braunfels of Fredericksburg. There was a, you know, which is German heritage. That was people from Germany who settled that area. And so my German friend was interested in that, of course. We went to a historical demonstration, presentation, and the docent told us that a particular religious group had helped the Germans found New Braunfels. And so back in the car, I told my friend, you know, that wasn't true. I said, why do you say that? I said, because that religious group started in 18 whatever, and New Braunfels was founded in blah, blah, blah. So there were no XYZs when Fredericksburg or New Braunfels was founded. She said, You mean they would lie? I said, ha, well, I don't know if it was an intentional lie, but it was intended to advertise their religious group. It was not a truthful telling of the founding of these cities. But anyway, so, but you did see, you saw the kind of craftsmanship that was brought over from Germany and the kind of culture, you know, and it was a lot of fun. It was thrilling in so many ways. You understood Texas history better. You understood various cultures better and so forth. So I truly strongly recommend that you take your children to various historical sites, read history and so forth, and it will illuminate what they do teach in school. And unfortunately, some of that's not quite right, but it, history is always going to be somewhat spun because somebody writes it from their perspective. Get perspective. So that's number one, is history. And again, I apologize for the Texas bias, but I can only tell you my own stories, well, which happen to have been in Texas. But it doesn't matter where you are. If you're in Baltimore and you're in the middle of racial tensions, do you remember that Baltimore was a leader early on in racial integration and racial harmony? Go to those places and talk about that and find people who remember. And if you're in Japan, there are so many places to visit. I know them because they're put on public television and they say, well, a short train ride from Osaka and then you can be at this place. And beautiful historical cultural places, and you find something about the fabric, you find something about a candy co-op, you find something about various religions in Japan. And I can just imagine that if I were a busy mother in Japan, I might not be watching what's on the tourist channel in Texas. But you can find, the point here is you can find history and culture and literature wherever you live. Now, when the children are a little older, you can talk about both sides of whatever dispute comes up, and that gives them perspective. History, travel, history, reading. And when you can't go someplace, perhaps for budgetary reasons or whatever reasons, you can do virtual trips. I've suggested this to some of my friends. I had wanted to take them on a train ride across Canada because I'd like to do that, but discovered that some of them had budgetary problems. Some of them live in Canada and that's not so fun for them. Some of them have mobility issues. And so I suggested, well, I would just pick a place and we would have a virtual trip. So we have people who like art, so I could get some pictures of some museums. Some of us like reading, so I could get some locations. Like if you're going through Missouri, just picked at random, you could go through the home of Laura Ingalls Wilder. And could also go through some sites about Mark Twain and so forth. And so you could make a virtual trip. So this would be a great project, particularly if you need to stay inside, your kids can help you with that. All right, so moving right along from history, how about business? So I'm just going to post an episode with Richard Eberiga, who encourages children to start business. And I've told you about some situations where kids started micro businesses. Okay. How about music? So there's always music camps around. If you can't locate one in your area, or it's too expensive, or they exclude students who don't make grades. And that's one of my pet peeves is, you know, we have a lot of students who don't make A's, and it is simply not wise for society to limit all the good opportunities to those who make A's. And so music camp, if you don't have one, make one. Take your kid to the music store, find some videos on how to play something, and make your own music camp. Even better if you can get several friends to do that. And then make a concert, you know, a garage concert for all their friends. I think that there's so many things involved in that. Children need to be exposed to real life and to something about the adult life. For instance, maybe you all could volunteer at a concert series. Maybe your local public radio station or your local university will have concerts, and you can volunteer. And this helps a child actually know something about the work world and also about the music or cultural presentation at the concert. Truly strongly recommend this. It impoverishes children to some great extent if they are at home only playing video games. So let that not happen. Okay, so that's music. What about tech? There are so many good tech opportunities. Now, there could be computer camp. You can maybe send your kid to, but you can make one, you know. Build a computer tower yourself. Build any number of models that you can buy at the hobby store. Build a crystal radio set. That's very easy. And if you'd like to buy some radio projects, go to Borden Radio online, Borden Radio. And that's an enthusiast who just out of his garage or extra room sells things. But he has had a whole career, a very illustrious career. I'll let him tell you about that. So it's Borden Radio. And you know what? The ARRL, the American Radio Relay League, otherwise known as Ham Radio Operators, always have a demonstration day in June. And so it's called Field Day. So go online and search for your ham club's Field Day, otherwise known as the ARRL, the American Radio Relay League. And you'll find one every big city has at least one such club, and that's their open house. There'll be an older gentleman there who will show you around. There's no question about that. And a few younger people and even children have gotten their licenses and have done really well. You can talk around the world or around the block with your radio. And how about, so take some field trips. Take some field trips from other denominations or even other religions. Now, this may curl the toes of many of my listeners. It is my opinion that if you allow your children knowledge of various other groups and why they think the way they do and why you think the way you do, that this will insulate and inoculate them from the kind of rebellion that happens. There is replicated, robust research that shows that church-affiliated schools have better academic outcome. But if the child is so sheltered that they do not discover Christians who have academically articulated positions, they begin to think that Christianity is ignorant. And given the bifurcation of education in this country, such that almost all highly educated people during the 1900s were liberal theologically in the mainline churches, and it was the less educated people who largely carried the banner of biblical worldview, it becomes very difficult for young people who are then exposed to that more educated world not to pick up the prejudice that faith is ignorant. And of course, that's not true. There have always been, in fact, the highest level of theology has brought us back to Bible. And the greatest leadership has always been biblical. Because if you sally forth in intellect alone, you're just not going to get as far as intellect plus faith, where you're tapping into the source of all being. I mean, that's obvious, right? So this is my argument for, yes, you should have field trips to other religions and certainly other denominations. I remember as a child going to Christ Church. So I was raised in a Protestant denomination. My parents, of course, thought it was best. But downtown Houston is a beautiful Episcopalian church called Christ Church. And it introduced me, that field trip introduced me to a lot of history, a lot of, you know, because the way that the church was constructed was very historical. And so now when I see churches in England or read historical novels and so forth, I have a real good idea of what's going on. But also it introduced me to some theology that today I specifically don't agree with. You can see in the very way they build the buildings, and the same with the Greek Orthodox Church. As much as I love what I hear when I visit with Greek Orthodox priests, I can go and see the church and go, yes, but you also do this, and you also do this, and you believe in that. And that's simply not biblical or Christian in my view. And so, you know, we can have friendly discussions. They are, in fact, in the same worldwide communion, and so I recognize their Christianity, and there are some things about their devotional life that I find very precious. And the denomination, well, I'll just say that my parents were Methodists, and so my denomination doesn't have that rich iconography or the kind of devotion that the Greek Orthodox do. But gosh, I wish I had read Wesley when I was a child, because only recently have I read Wesley, and he had great thoughts around charity, around devotion, around biblicity that I think is wonderful. And, you know, somebody else growing up in the Methodist Church, and certainly while I was in the Methodist Church, I heard none of that. None of that. And if you are tempted at this point to, in pride, turn me off because your church is biblical, you are who I'm speaking to. Don't be ignorant, and don't squeeze the mind of your children so that they rebel. Get some perspective. Offer them some educational opportunities. That is the point. Then you can discuss with them why you think the way you do. They won't throw the baby out with the bathwater because you're ignorant. Introduce your kids. Take field trips. And involve your children in real activity. So today, we're talking about evangelism, usually through revivals. Take them to a revival. Help them volunteer. Maybe they can set out chairs. Maybe if you're doing evangelism, if you're passing out tracts, they can do that with you. It is a huge, huge deal for young people and children to have windows on the adult world. Do not keep them locked away in their bedroom with a screen. Do not do that. Expose them to a selected but wider world. Yes? When you send them down the block to play, you don't know who they are interacting with unless you take some effort to know. But when you are taking them to selective events and selected places with you, you know that it's wholesome, educative, and that it's educational, and it will enrich their lives. All right, so that is my list of things to do. This is more the length of my usual episode, but I think it's all valuable. Please come and share your ideas too, and maybe share some pictures, particularly if you have some great pictures of your kids interacting with something wonderful and fun. Look for forthcoming curriculum. I was asked to write a Bible curriculum for homeschoolers, And because there just wasn't Bible curriculum for kids in upper elementary. And so I did that. So that will be coming out this summer, hopefully soon. Also, please notice that in the summer, there are many homeschooling conventions. The Texas Homeschool Convention in the Woodlands, which is north of Houston, is coming up this weekend. Very soon, we're going to have one in the Austin area. There's usually one in the Houston area, and probably there's going to be one where you are. So I strongly recommend this to new homeschooling parents. Fork over what money and transportation costs it is, and don't just go and buy curriculum. Go and truly participate. Talk to everybody every that you can. Go to the breakout sessions. Go to all of the tables, and you'll probably want to buy some stuff, but don't limit yourself to a very small sampling of that, okay? So homeschool conventions and new curriculum coming out, and having been out at my usual Memorial Day, I am shocked and saddened to discover that there are still people who are afraid of COVID. It's very important that you learn, because that pattern is being continued. So I do have a whole packet on COVID where I do some teaching in terms of statistics and et cetera, et cetera. So go to the website at www.greatshalom.org, www.greatshalom.org, and click the shop tab. I've got several sales going on. Okay. And so this is Sharon Sarles proclaiming that God wants total well-being for all children. So go get it.
Thank you for joining us for the Great Shalom Broadcast with your host, Sharon Sarles. Sharon is an author, educator, minister, parent, and grandparent committed to sharing the understanding of God's love and desire that all children experience optimal well-being in this generation and the generations to come.